Okay, now we've got him. Peter Gollenbach joins us now on Savern on Sports with Guy Junker. Stan Savern here, Peter. Sorry we had a difficult time getting in touch with you, but glad we did. Thanks for joining us today.
You're very welcome. I just got out of the witness protection program, so it's,
I'm sorry we didn't see you there. We've been locked in there for years. Let me just begin, Peter, by asking you the question. Major League Baseball has its issues. They're rather severe at this point in terms of popularity, all kinds of suggestions to change the way the game is played, or at least the pace of the game. Is that what prompted you to write this book? Because most people would agree that the 50s and 60s, that was the, quote, golden age of baseball.
As far as I'm concerning, baseball right now is as wonderful today as it was 50 years ago. It's just fabulous. There's no other game like it. Anybody who doesn't agree with me, they're not true baseball fans, period. That's it. And as to why I wrote this particular book, when I was a junior at Dartmouth, I was the sports editor of the Dartmouth, and I got a book in the mail, The Glory of Their Times, by Larry Ritter. And I read this thing, and I read it over and over and over again, because it gave me a window into what it was like to be a ball player in the 1910s and 1920s. I've been interviewing ball players now for 40-something years, for Dynasty and Bums and Wrigleyville and Fenway and Amazing about the Mets. And about 3 years ago, my very close friend Jim Bouton, he got dementia, and last year he died. And I thought to myself, what would be the best way to keep his memory alive? And so in this particular book, he's chapter one, where he talks about how a boy from New Jersey somehow managed to make the Yankees and become a pitching star. And he's the last chapter, which was about his how he wrote Ball Four and what happened to him after he wrote it. In between, what I did is I took my interviews with people like Ted Williams, Stan Musial, Roy Campanella, Ron Santo, so many others, Jim Brosnan, Kirby Higbee, Phil Rizzuto, Roger Maris, and I included them in the body of this work.
Peter, I don't know if you would agree with me on. I went to a Catholic grade school where the nuns made us do book reports all the time. So every
how are your fingers?
they're misshapen in my ripe old age.
I imagine those rulers must really hurt.
But I always something about baseball books that whether it's The Boys of Summer, The Glory of Their Times is one of my favorite ones. The Luckiest Man, Lou Gehrig. I love that book.
Right.
I never quite got the enjoyment reading about the other sports, which I love just as much as baseball. Why do you think that is? And I don't think I'm alone.
Because any boy growing up can play baseball. Any boy, doesn't matter short, tall, fat, skinny, you can play baseball. You can't play football, and if you're short and uncoordinated, you can't play basketball. And if you're not from Canada, you probably can't play hockey. So all these people in this country have played baseball, and as they grew up, they had their fans, their favorites, players who they loved. It's still the way today. It hasn't changed any. Teenage kids, love their favorite players. Aaron Judge is still, Stanton. For Yankee fans, these people are still the players that these kids love. That has never changed.
How much of it do you think, Peter, is that baseball comes into your home 162 times a year? Even going back to my day, 154.
Right.
But it comes in every day. Every game is available to you, easily available. I don't think younger people watch it or listen to it as much. I think those studies prove that's the case. But how much of that, because, like you said, everybody can play, everybody has played.
Right.
How much of a factor is that? It just seems like more of a romantic game, if you will.
It is a more romantic game, and it is every bit a factor. I have season tickets to the Tampa Bay Rays. I live here in St. Petersburg, Florida. My wife, who is an equally fond fan of the Rays, she won't go to the games, but she watches every single one of them on the television at home while I'm sitting in the stadium. So the TV is a very important aspect to this, very important.
Sounds like a makings of a really good marriage. You're at the game and she's at home. That's perfection right there.
Well, I mean, she, you know, for 6 or 7 years, she would come to the games. And at a certain point, she decided it was much more comfortable to sit there and watch the game on TV. So that's fine.
Peter, tell us a story about Stan Musial from your book, because he's from nearby Denora, even though he didn't play for the Pirates. And Stan and I, as a matter of fact, at a Steeler pep rally before their last Super Bowl, his nephew was there. And then, you remember this, Stan? His nephew come up to us and say, hey, I'm Stan Musial's nephew. You know, would you guys like an autographed ball? And we're like, yeah, right. Well, the Steelers won the AFC Championship game. They had another pep rally that we broadcast from before the Super Bowl. The guy shows up and gives us two baseballs autographed, but gave each of us a baseball autographed by Stan Musial. So tell us something that would be interesting for Pittsburgh fans about Stan.
Oh, I'd be happy to tell you about Stan. Lovely, lovely guy. And I interviewed him. The Cardinals were doing their spring training in St. Petersburg, and I had the opportunity to interview him for my book, The Spirit of St. Louis, which was about the Cardinals and the Browns. So Stan was telling me that when he first started, he was a pitcher in Class D. And his manager was, of all people, Dickie Kerr. If you remember, during the 1919 Black Sox World Series, when those other White Sox pitchers were throwing games, Dickie Kerr was a clean one. Dickie Kerr, I believe, won two of those games for the White Sox during that series. So Dickie was Stan Musial's manager, and Stan was having real problems pitching. He was not being successful, and he was about to quit when Dickie Kerr said to him, Stan, you have I really like the way you hit. I think you have a future in Major League Baseball if you work on your hitting. And, of course, you know the rest of the story is that he worked on his hitter and became a Hall of Fame ball player as a result of that. But, I mean, it's funny the way baseball works. If perhaps he had a different manager, it's possible you never would have heard of Stan Musial.
Peter Gollenbach's our guest, and the book is entitled Whispers of the Gods, written so many others. The Bronx Zoo with Sparky Lyle certainly comes to mind. Something I feel, again, it's a matter of your perception based on your age. You know, when I was 12 years old, I worshipped ball players. Although growing
up, you should have. That's what you're supposed to do.
Yeah, except I grew up in Cleveland, so it wasn't easy.
They traded Rocky Colavito. I mean, I can understand your feelings. You know,
Peter, Stan was an Indians ball boy, believe it or
I
not.
I was. Yes.
Oh, I love that. That's fantastic.
Yeah,
that's great.
The Cleveland Plain Dealer had a contest for boys 13 through 17 years of age, and you had to submit an essay. And 1 year, 1962, I was one of the finalists for the bat boy. I didn't get that, but I was chosen as an alternate as a ball boy. It was a thrill of a lifetime, and that's a whole other story. But the teams weren't very good. In fact, the Indians...
Doesn't matter.
It mattered to me.
No, the Rays showed up in 1998, and they didn't start winning until like 2008. Who cares? The idea is you're watching Major League Baseball. What difference does it make?
Well, but the problem is that all those years I wasn't watching Major League Baseball. I was watching the Indians. The Indians then were like the Pirates are now.
Half of the game was Major League.
Right, half the game. If you want. But was it a product of age? Certainly fans today have greater access to the player just because of social media, and yet there seems to be more of a distance between fan and ball player, even though the opportunities are there. I don't know that young people idolize ball players. You know, for example, Rocky Colavito. Every kid in Cleveland would point the bat straight at the pitcher that he did every pitch. But I don't know if that's the case today.
Well, the Guardians got some pretty good players, and I guarantee you those 12-year-olds are copying what those people are doing. And don't forget, too, these are the 12-year-olds who aren't playing esports.
Right.
These are not the 12-year-olds who stuck to their goddamn phones every minute of the day. These are people who are real baseball fans at age 12.
I'm just wondering. It was just such a romantic era. And, you know, the other thing is it's also a curse and a benefit.
But we just saw last week, and as an example, Key Brian Hayes, Pirate third baseman, Peter.
Yep.
The second game of the season at home was an afternoon game against the Cubs.
Right.
And he had four hits. So we're all waiting in the locker room to get interviews. And he doesn't show up for 40 minutes. We're like, where the hell did he come in? He goes, sorry, guys, I was signing autographs. And we're like, all this time, he goes, well, I didn't want to sign four or five and walk away. He stayed out on the field and after the game was over. So there may not be as much of that as there used to be, but there is still some of it.
Look, in every era, there are ball players who love the fans, who will stand there and sign autographs like crazy. There are ball players like Roger Maris. Roger Maris, who obviously hit 61 home runs in 1961, he was a guy who was very shy. He really despised the reporters. In 1961, starting in June, he must have been asked five or six times before every game, do you think you'll break Babe Ruth's record? And Maris is in this book, and he's telling me he just wanted to be left alone. There are guys like that. So, I mean, some of the guys will sign autographs. Some of the guys will be more than happy to talk to the media. And there's some guys who don't want any part of it. It's just, it doesn't matter whether it's 1920, 1960, or now. It's just, that's just sort of the way it is.
Peter, when you, just your own experience, do you follow the other sports more closely? Or is it just that baseball is so much head and shoulders above everything else that that's the sport you fell in love with and stayed in love with?
I fell in love with baseball when I was about seven. I was sure that I was going to be the next center fielder after Mickey Mantle. Now, of course, Mickey played until 1968, and by that time I was 26 years old, and it's a little bit too late, you know, and I couldn't hit a curveball. But don't forget, too, when I was growing up, my first memories of a full season was 1955, and I was lived in Stamford, Connecticut, and the Yankees won in 55, and they won in 56, and they won in 57, and they won in 58. They slipped in 59 to the damn Chicago White Sox, and then they won in 60, and 61, and 62, and 63, and 64. You know, this was my whole life right there. You know, I knew whatever I was going to do, I was going to be a World Series winner.
And lastly, just give us some of the names, the chapters, and the people that you're writing about in this book.
Sure. Well, about in this chapter 1 and 9 and 17, Eddie Frolik, who called me up one day, he was the trainer for Joe McCarthy and the New York Yankees and Babe Ruth, and he tells some wonderful stories about Ruth, including the fact that Ruth did not call his shot against Charlie Ruth. Ruth told him he did not call his shot against Charlie Ruth. Marty Marion, Rex Barney, who told me how Pee Wee Reese walked across the diamond and put his arm around Jackie Robinson's shoulders when they were in Cincinnati, which was amazing because Pee Wee was from Louisville, which is right across the river. And when he put his arm around Jackie, it shut up all the hateful fans. Stan Musial, we talked about. Sturdivant talked about Casey Stengel and Mickey Mantle. Jim Brosnan, who was part of the Cubs when they had their College of Coaches disaster.
Mm.
Ted Williams talked about Joe Jackson, Shoeless Joe, and why he should be in the Hall of Fame. Gene Conley talked about why he tried to go to Israel in the middle of the season. Kirby Higbee talked about Jackie. Phil Rizzuto, of course, talked about how much he hated Casey Stengel. Ron Santo talked about his time with the Cubs. Roy Campanella talked about Jackie. Maris talked about how terribly he was treated at the end of his career with the Yankees. Monty Irvin talked about how he really was going to be the first African-American before Jackie, but that he had been treated so terribly in the Army that he just couldn't do it. So those are the boys.
It sounds great. It's great. It's what we call in the broadcast business a great tease to get the book available at Amazon and bookstores, I would imagine.
I would hope so.
Okay.
If they're not in bookstores, I don't know where they are, but I hope they're there.
There are still bookstores, boys and girls. There's life beyond Amazon. So
there is.
Check that out. Peter, it was wonderful catching up with you. Thanks so much for your time. Best of luck with the book. We hope we sold a few for you today.
Thank you so much, and go Pirates!
Yeah, all right, that's doing so bad, all things considered, or at least in terms of expectations.
Even their better teams couldn't win in Milwaukee.
Right, exactly. Peter Golenbach has been our guest.
Thanks, Peter.
You're welcome.
All right, take care. That sounds like a fun book.
I love stuff like that. You know, I can remember one time we had a young producer. It was on our days at ESPN, the other ESPN stand. And he said something about that was before my time. And I looked at him and I